Milwaukee's 102.9, The Hog presents another Bob and Brian podcast.
This Bob and Brian On Demand is brought to you by Mountain Dew. Mountain Dew exhilarates and quenches with its one-of-a-kind great taste. Mountain Dew, this is how we do.
Ladies and gentlemen, joining us via the phone lines again this morning, Gary Graff. Good morning, Gary. How are you?
All right. How are you guys?
Very, very
good.
Well.
Been watching, been enjoying the fine footage from the U.S. Open.
How does it look to you on TV?
It looks great. Obviously, we have an issue with getting aerial shots now, but, after the blimp crash.
Nobody on the Fox crew got a shot of the
160 Fox cameras out at the golf course.
Not one, but how many cell phones got it?
Everyone.
I know. It's like, but shouldn't somebody there with a high-def camera?
They're there to shoot golf, Brian. They're not there to shoot hot air balloons.
Well, yeah, but it does look good on TV. And, good. Certainly gives me the impression that course would eat me alive. So.
Well, if you ever come, we'll go to dinner out there.
All right.
They love us out there.
All right. That's good to know.
All right. We can go to dinner. I don't know if you want to play the course. You have to walk it.
Seven and a half miles.
What time was it when they ran that piece on the building of Erin Hills? Was it around 4 o'clock?
Yeah, it was. It was pre-dinner time. Yeah. Right. Yeah.
No, I prefer to walk. So.
All right.
I'm all for it.
All right. We're gonna have to wait until the PGA is out of there because they're hogging the whole place right now.
It's probably hard to get a tee time the next few days.
Hey, I was watching Velocity Channel last weekend just because I'm tired of watching every other channel. I thought I'd go watch them fix a car for a while, and I saw a car collector show. I had no idea Neil Sean was such a car aficionado. I know he's crazy because he's one of our top stories today,
right.
But.
Yeah, no, a lot of those Northern California, San Francisco cats, Sammy Hagar, some of the Grateful Dead guys, Carlos Santana, they're into their cars.
It's funny you bring up a Sammy because I saw him on Diners, Drive-Ins, and Dives. He was hanging out in Hawaii with Guy Fieri, and they were going to McFleetwood's restaurant.
They're good buddies. There's this whole little community, and the guy who put all this together was Shep Gordon, Alice Cooper's manager. If you ever see the movie Supermensch or read his book, he kind of created the whole concept of the super chef, taking these guys and letting them market themselves on TV and, through other sources.
We have Bobby Flay and...
It is. Yeah. Bobby Flay, Emeril, all those guys. This was like a Shep Gordon, showbiz thing.
There you go. What, Neil Sean and Jonathan Cain... Back at it.
I mean, we're talking at it. It's really, Jonathan Cain isn't playing ball. Neil Sean put out that broadside last week, and Cain responded with kind of a namby-pamby message and hasn't said anything since. Neil, the beginning of this week, sent out another, hard message accusing Jonathan Cain of trying to excise him from the songwriting credits of Don't Stop Believin'. Without being specific about what that's about, but he just said, in the press, Jonathan Cain's trying to make it look like it was a Cain Steve Perry song when Neil Sean had something to do with it, and then just uttering more stuff about how Journey is his band and his control, and something's going on. I tried to get a hold of Neil this week, and was kind of told by his people that no, we're not going to let him talk to anybody. And I'm sure they'd like to get his phone and computer away from him.
Really? So you think they're trying to rein him in? Like, hey, enough!
Well,
stop!
Can you imagine what this tour must be like? I mean, you wake up in the morning and the guy's slamming you on Twitter.
Yeah, unpleasant.
Then you got to go on stage at night. how does that work?
Not well, I'm guessing.
I'm sure. I'm sure there's a great story about how they're on separate tour buses and enter from different sides of the stage and barely look at each other. There are a lot of fans have posted on social media. This was even just before Neil's first Twitter broadside. They've posted on social media how unhappy Jonathan Cain looks at these shows. So it's clearly being noticed, and it's clearly having some effect.
I went to a show like that once when Supertramp announced they were done after particular tour, and I saw them in Detroit.
Well, they announced
literally the band was on one side of the stage, and
Roger Hodgson. Roger Hodgson was on the other. I was at that same show. It was 1983.
They had actually announced
it was the last tour before they went out.
Right.
So, but you could see like, this isn't an amicable parting.
It was obvious to the audience that there's them and there's him.
Right. Right, and then they had those two extra guys playing kind of in the middle.
Did they? I don't remember.
Yeah.
Buffer zone.
Yeah.
You probably had more cocktails before the show than I did because I had to write a review.
Did Yoko Ono participate in the writing of Imagine?
You know, John Lennon says she did. You know, the story here is that Yoko Ono is being given a co-writing credit for Imagine, you know, 41 years later. And based on an interview by John that say in which he says, yeah, Yoko should have gotten a co-writing credit on this, that he took a lot of the ideas from a book that she had written and published.
So what does that mean financially, I guess?
Well, it's funny because it means a lot of money. It doesn't mean any more money because she, as John Lennon's widow, was getting the money for Imagine, you know. But it does mean that now some of the checks come in her name.
And that changes
not just to the estate of John Lennon.
Is there a tax thing with that? Does she get more because her income is...
That's income. That's income. But, you know, John did do this interview, and they played it. The news came out at this ceremony the other night for the National Music Publishers Association. Imagine got the Centennial Song Award, and that's where they announced she was being given the co-writer credit. So there's some taxes involved in it, but there's taxes already involved in what she's getting, and I'm no tax attorney. Somebody out there can probably call in and tell us, but I bet there's a lower tax on money that goes directly to her than there is on estate tax.
You've been following bands and all these dudes for a long time. Is Gene Simmons the first guy to do the devil horns? And can
Gene,
you really?
No, Gene Simmons is not interesting. he has filed with the U.S. Trademark Office attempting to trademark the devil's horn sign, saying that, you know, and he's citing Hotter Than Hell, which was 1974.
Is this like when I was a kid, I heard the wheelbarrow had no patent? Like, if you patent the wheelbarrow, you get all the money, and it's no one's ever done it.
Right, and that's what I think. He's either trying to do that or he's just trying to make a little news. As soon as he did this, the members of the band Coven came out to show us their 1969 album cover, where they're all flashing the devil's horns.
Okay, pre-Gene's date.
Yeah. Yeah, so I think this is not going to end well for Gene. Ronnie James Dio's widow, Wendy Dio, you know, came out as well, you know, in an interview and just said, "Look, that's public domain." You know, Ronnie, of course, was one of the great users of flashers of the devil's horn, and yeah, she just said it's ridiculous. It's, you know, that he should be embarrassed.
Okay, so
pull out of himself.
I'll go back to my same pitch. What does that mean for him financially? No one's going to send him a quarter every time they want to flash the devil's horns.
Well, it puts the onus on Gene to go after people doing the devil's horn. He's not going to get the trademark, so we don't need to devote a great deal of thought to it. But he's made news, as he's so good at doing.
Phil Collins is back on his feet.
Yeah, he got on stage in Germany after his fall in Britain. He apparently had a big old bandage on his head where the stitches were, and you know, it apparently went well. So he's recovered and continues to recover, and that, you know, hopefully he'll finish this tour in England. I think it wraps up June 30th, and he is playing. He's going to make up the shows he canceled in London in November, a couple of dates in November, and you can only think he's going to add a few more shows and hopefully do something over here in the States.
So last week we talked about Dylan finally shows up for his speech, or he sends a videotape for a speech to the Nobel people, right?
Right.
And now this week he's being accused of plagiarizing that speech that he delivered?
A bunch of people have noticed that some of the comments he made about Moby Dick in particular are remarkably similar to what you read in the Sparks notes about Moby Dick. That's what's kind of replaced the old Cliff's notes, is Sparks notes. And you do, you know, they point it out and you look and it's like, ooh, yeah, that's, you know. So unless Dylan wrote the Sparks notes for Moby Dick, it would appear that he borrowed some material from them. Not the first time he's been accused of appropriating things, by the way. He's long been considered kind of a cultural pirate, you know, especially musically and stylistically and in some of his prose writings.
So if he, put a footnote at the bottom of his speech? Or
yeah, it should, you know, you should he should sort if it truly is taken from it, he should source it. And just say, you know, either, like you say, a footnote, just indicate where it came from or acknowledge it in his,
okay.
in his presentation.
And then you're okay.
And then you're okay.
All right. Finally, because we're out of time, what's our last topic?
Well, Bob Seger, this morning, you know, he's been the one of the big holdouts for streaming services. And, you know, and it's been written about, talked about quite a bit. Well, as of this morning, 13 of his albums are available on Amazon Music, Spotify, you know, Pandora, or a few of the not Pandora, but Napster, and a few of the others. First time ever, they're promising more of the titles will surface. But now you can, you know, if you feel like hearing Ramblin' Gamblin' Man on your Spotify, you can do it.
Finally.
Finally.
I mean, it's the whole library? Is the whole library there finally?
No, just 13 songs.
Oh,
what is it? Eight?
What is his problem?
Well, I don't fault this as a business strategy. Why give up the whole thing when you can make news each time you dribble some more out there? And in his case, he has some of these early 70s albums before he hit big, the people that have been out of print for a long time that he's just been clamoring for. So when they finally put those out via the streaming services, you know, they'll be able to make some news out of that.
All right.
And he's always been a slow adapter. I mean, he really didn't start putting out CDs of his catalog till 1989. He wasn't on iTunes till 2011. So, you know, it's no surprise that it took him this long to go into streaming.